review. I mean, as you said, the person felt comfortable and safe to provide his name. And I think that reflects a disturbing increase in Islamophobia and a disturbing increase in what appears to be acceptability of that type of rhetoric and hate being spewed. And it certainly doesn't help when elected officials seem to be following that same line of hate and speaking out in ways that are contrary to American values.
Well, Rul Alush, I want to thank you for being with us, National Board Chair of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, known as CARE. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is hiring a development director to lead our fundraising efforts, also an on-air graphics operator. You can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Hermit Sheikh, Robbie Caron, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud. I'm Amy Goodman with... special thanks to Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, David Prude, Ariel Boone, John Randolph, Kieran Krugmeadows, and Charina Ndura. Go to democracynow.org for transcripts, video, and audio podcasts. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today's guest is former Portlander Penny Allen, who now lives in France, and we'll talk about the attacks on Paris.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Circus Church, Sunday, November 22nd, 9 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge in Portland. There will be burlesque performers, circus artists, vocalists, audience games, confessions, and more. Again, that's Circus Church, Sunday, November 22nd, 9 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge, 2432 Southeast 11th Avenue in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of La Peña Flamenca de Portland, Saturday, November 21st at 8 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater in Portland. This month, the band will be El Cuadro Pepe y Rafael y Lily Last with cantores Elisa Rocha y Christy Jenny. Again, that's La Peña Flamenca de Portland, Saturday, November 21st at 8 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater, located at 55 Northeast Farragut Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm David Barsamian, host of Alternative Radio, heard every Tuesday morning at 9 on KBOO. KBOO currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 by a group of generous donors and foundations. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Go to kboo.fm/support to get your donation matched today.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503-230-2300.
Thank you. Ah, La Marseillaise. This is KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor and me, Joe Uris. Abe isn't here. I will be talking very shortly with Penny Allen, who many of you may know of or know. She has made films here in Portland and elsewhere. She's a writer. She's also now a French and American citizen. And she lives in Paris. And I trust her. And we're going to put her on the air right now. Penny, are you there?
Yes, I am, Joe. Hi.
Hi, how are ya?
No, I apologize if I lose my voice in the middle of this conversation or if I have to blow my nose or something because I'm kind of sick, but I'm with you.
I really appreciate you doing this, knowing specifically how things are in Paris and also that you are personally kind of ill. Is this illness a psychosomatic response to the horrors of what's taken place in the last few days, do you think?
Probably it is, yes. And yes, and you know, having now two really frightening experiences, you know, there were or after effects, after waves, like tsunamis after the original attacks, and that doesn't help much for one's equilibrium. Well, there.
What do you mean by the after waves?
Well, if you were able to go on CNN right now on the internet and. At least the French version of CNN, you would see where just right outside my window, where they've just found this morning the the car of the eighth guy who had been, you know, missing or in he was hiding and he rented this car in Belgium and it's not really clear, you know, since they don't give complete information, but. But, you know, it's sort of frightening to think, you know, that they, that he and who knows who else abandoned that car in the middle of the night, probably, and then drove off somewhere else in a different car. And so when I went outside today, there's, you know, like about 1,000 cops. And, you know, the whole place is cordoned off and off because they had to check and see if it was full of explosive devices.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's not too good for anyone's peace of mind around my neighborhood.
Now, just to put this in some geographic and cultural perspective, your neighborhood is a neighborhood with a large North African and Equatorial African population. Isn't that correct?
That's right, yes. Uh-huh.
So how are... I guess the question I really want to start with is, how are the people in your neighborhood responding? Have you had a chance to find out? I know everyone was supposed to stay in shelter inside. Have you had a chance to talk with anybody there?
Well, I've talked to a lot of people, and especially I talked to them this morning when I went out because, of course, everyone went, well, first of all, you know, saying, what's happening? What's happening? And you know, people were pretty much on edge, and, you know, a few people crying and that sort of thing, and as I said, though, it's nothing compared to the what happened on Friday night. And, you know, I was actually in a neighborhood, a sort of an adjacent neighborhood that evening myself and having dinner and, you know, came home and knew nothing about what had happened and until my phone started ringing about midnight and continued on for hours.
Yeah. So, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean
to. No, anything. That's okay. That's okay. Yeah.
I just, I'm, there's so many things I wanted to talk about and so many things that need to be covered. I'm aware of the, kind of the playbook of Al-Qaeda, called the management of savagery, which seems to be the playbook being carried out by, and by the way, can you teach me how to say the correct
Daesh.
Name?
Daesh.
Daesh rather than
all over the world for the Islamic State.
Okay,
you know,
Daesh.
We don't really say ISIL or ISIS here.
Okay.
We say Daesh.
Daesh. I will learn that and use it from henceforth. But it's really clear to me, and I think should be clear to anyone who thinks about all this, that what these people are doing is making every effort to provoke the Western nations into and Russia into a endless war, which they believe ardently will result eventually in the defeat of all the Western nations and the successful creation of a caliphate in the Middle East and elsewhere. And I see beginning with the incredibly stupid, awful decision of Cheney and Bush to go into Iraq, I see that this playbook is being copied almost by the Western nations. And it makes me not only depressed, but a bit frightened. Now in the U.S., you may not know this or you may, at least 20 states are saying they don't want any of these, they don't want any of these refugees. There's a real problem and a legitimate question about vetting refugees. Meanwhile, all of Syria is in turmoil. All of Iraq is in turmoil. The situation deteriorates day by day. And it does not seem, even as we strike cities with our bombing, that we are being able to do much any much more than make everybody miserable and angry. And I wondered if you how you saw that from the perspective of a person who is French and living in France.
Well, that's a very general remark, and I don't really.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Remarks. Yeah. You know, but you know, to be more specific, I think. You know, what happened, you know, on Friday night at the Bataclan, the club where some 90 people were murdered, and the cafes around there, you know, the terrorists that were doing that actually were hollering things like, this is your, in perfect French, you know, they are French or else they're Belgian.
Mm-hmm.
They were hollering that this is your president's fault, and this is because he is bombing in Syria, and this is a tit for tat, retaliation, you know, eye for an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, very specifically what they, you know, what on that level of an act, of an action, that is what they are doing. They don't have that larger perspective of the creation of the caliphate in mind, I don't believe. I mean, they do at other times, but they are very disciplined in what they're doing, and they do exactly what their plan of action calls for. You know, when it appears that they are going to be shot by the police, then they're supposed to blow themselves up. So that's what they do. This one guy who seems to, you know, be a mystery in terms of his participation. I don't, you know, who knows why he is, you know, still out there, and what was he there? Where was he on that Friday night? You know,
So
as I said, I don't really like to generalize too much from all of that. You know, it's when you do that, you run the risk bundling together all Muslims, and that happens. It happens a lot in the United States. It happens somewhat less in France, because France has a lot of experience with North Africans, having colonized them, and then having something like 8 or 10 million North Africans living in France. So they have more experience. So they don't bundle them all together. And the fact that this, I'm going to leap here. The fact that, you know, that this car was found in my neighborhood does not suggest that it has anything to do with the people in my neighborhood, because, you know, the people, the Muslims in my neighborhood, the Arabs in my neighborhood, are not of that radical Islam bent at all. They just, you know, what I can imagine what they did, because there's this ring road that goes around Paris, and we're not too terribly far from the exit that comes onto the very street where they dumped the car. You know, so I can imagine they came around the ring road, they came in there, they dumped the car, and then they went back onto the ring road immediately. And, you know, so it was, I think it's more of a matter of convenience. I would never put the blame on anything connected with my neighborhood, because I have, you know, I know the people in my neighborhood rather well, and that is not what they're, you know, they're pretty alarmed, they're pretty upset, you know, and it's when people are asking them why can't you control this, you know, it's like they have no contact with it whatsoever. You know, this idea to do what they did on Friday night was originated in Syria, and they do already have pictures on the internet of the guy who did who is at the base of this whole plot.
Mm-hmm.
He's not here, you know. He's not here. He might have been originally French or Belgian, but he has not been here for a long time. You know, he's in Syria. as I said, I kind of wandered from your point, but the you could say, you'll pardon me if I'm a little jumpy, you know, today, just having had this experience.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah,
I immediately thought of you and being an old friend and so on, because you're in France and you're a fairly knowledgeable person and you're bilingual, and I thought this would be a good opportunity, an unusual and very sad moment, where some reality could be brought to the situation. And the reason why I mentioned the overall question of what is the function, why do these things, it is not, unfortunately, it is not so insane. It is immoral. It is horrible. But it fits to a plan designed, I believe, to create an endless war against Islam in the Middle East, and with a view, which is kind of like end-time Christianity, with a view toward the overall overweening success of and restoration of the mythic caliphate of the 8th or 9th century. And I see that, you know.
Right. And actually, and if people want to read about it, you know, in much, much better, much clearer than I can explain it,
mm-hmm.
you know, there already is a caliph, you know, there's already a caliphate, you know, they're already proclaiming it. And Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is the head of that, and he is in Iraq, or who knows where, because he keeps himself rather hidden. But there's a great article that was in the New York Review of Books in the July 9th issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's called "Inside the Islamic State," which tells the whole story. And when I first read that back in July, I kept it. You know, I thought, God, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's inevitable, and indeed they do believe in end time the way that, you know, radical Christians do, and the rapture and all that sort of thing. They don't believe in the rapture, but they do believe in the end time, and so everything is sort of in that context, you know, is aiming at that, and you know they're very clever in what they choose to do. You know, they don't stand, they don't stay around and fight when it's a losing battle. They slip away and move on to something that is more they're opportunistic, and you know that's something that not being a state, but of being, you know, sort of an assemblage of people, a gathering of people, or people like minded. You know, they can be much more liquid and much more fluid in their activity, and that's what's difficult for the states that are trying to fight against them, because they, you know, the United States foreign policy is hardly, you know, fluid. It's established until, you know, way past when it's valid. I mean, here the policy of the United States, as you said, is to a certain extent a continuation of what it was under Bush, and you know, it's no longer appropriate at all.
Yeah, this is a very, for me personally, and I think for anyone who thinks through the whole situation, this is a very frightening, beyond the horror, beyond the inhumanity of it all, this is a very frightening development, because it really is going to cause, already we see it in France, a tightening of security, a limiting of freedom of speech, a tendency to withdraw from democratic, and I use a small d in that, democratic values.
Well, indeed, you know, France, President Hollande declared a state of emergency, which hasn't happened. You know, I guess it happened in 2005 when there were all sorts of riots in the suburbs, and I think there was a brief state of emergency. But other than that, you have to kind of go back to Second World War. And what the state of emergency means is, it's another way of saying police state.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives all sorts of powers to the police and to the judiciary, and that are sort of extra constitutional. And there's all sorts of extra judicial actions that are taken, such as, the arrest of people who have files, who are on files, a file as being radicalized. And, that means they have an S by their name, and that's for surveillance. They're being surveyed. And, you know, the French people who were, who participated in the action on Friday night all had S's. yet they had not been arrested because they hadn't done anything yet. And that, you know, that's the democratic way. But then, but now they have, they're going extrajudicial and they're going to be, you know, arresting all of those people and, you know, taking them out of circulation. And I can't say that it's a bad idea. You know, I think that it has to be monitored. I think people have to be very careful about it. And everybody is already wondering, how long is this state of emergency going to last? You know, and there's no public gatherings, for instance, and with good reason, because there, the other frightening experience that I had since the Friday night things was on Sunday night, and you know, it's something that I guess has been happening all over Paris, which is these mass panic attacks, and you know, sort of crowd hysteria. And what happened was that I was walking, you know, toward where I was going to go have dinner with someone, and all of a sudden, you know, several hundred people were running toward me, screaming, they're shooting, and, you know, you don't know whether that's what to think, you know, and so, and not long after that, my telephone rang from the person I was going to go have dinner with, and he said, don't come, there's something going on here. And so I said, well, where should I go? Everyone's running, you know, I don't know what direction is right. And anyway, what happened was, you know, it's just crazy, because people are just crazed, and, you know, justly so, correctly so. It's a normal response. But what happened was this guy who had a restaurant just began pulling people in off the street, you know, and saying, come in here. And so we ended up about 100 people stuffed into this restaurant. And then, you know, he turns the lights off and shuts the door and, you know, draws the curtains. And then people are sort of peering out the windows because they don't really know what's happening. And we were there until my friend telephoned again and said it was really nothing. You know, it was a bar brawl, and all sorts of people, you know, all sorts of things were destroyed. It was trashed on the whole street, but still, it was nothing. You know, in the sense it wasn't a terrorist act. And you know, and you look out the window and people are walking normally on the street. You know, so I thought, I think I'm going out. You know, and I left and went, and nothing. There was nothing happening. So, but I don't know how long the rest of the people stayed stuffed in that room. You know, and most of them crying. It's the after effect, and it's you know, it makes people want to have you know, police state, limited, what have you.
Well, I do think this is really a lot of the plan. If you can destroy human rights, civil rights in a society out of fear of attack, and it doesn't take that many attacks apparently to do it. Not that they aren't big, not that they aren't horrible, but the obvious response of rage and terror on the part of the public kind of feeds into state power. It is absolutely corrupting, and it is absolutely, as you say, understandable, perfectly reasonable, and that's the irony of it.
Right. But that's exactly probably what you know, the perpetrator's desire is, you know, is this heightened fear, and you know, they're terrified of the terror, and I don't think that the state, the nation, actually wants to be, you know, to have a state of emergency. That really isn't what they want to be doing. So, but they have to, up to a certain point. They have until, since there are people that were apparently involved in those original attacks Friday night, mm-hmm. who have not been found, well, that is pretty much what they have to do. You know, they have to find those people, and they have to track them. And you know, the French have a terrific intelligence agencies, and they will probably find them, you know. I don't know about Belgium. I have no idea whether they are as tight in their, you know, in their intelligence agencies as they are in France, but it's a complicated situation. It really is, and as you said, as I said, it's exactly what the perpetrators wanted.
And well, this is the thing that seems both ironic and terrifying. The U.S. And again, I really take this back to the insane policies, oil motivated, I suspect, of Cheney and Bush and that crowd that unleashed or legitimized a minority position of many people. And I just want to mention a couple of things that most of our listeners may know or may not know. After World War One and the breakup of what was called the Ottoman Empire, which was the last caliphate, so-called, essentially, the partitioning of the Middle East was accomplished largely by giving parts of the Middle East to France or England. That breakup eventually evolved into the creation of the states, which are kind of artificially bordered, that are now the nations of Syria, Iraq, Jordan,
Lebanon,
Israel, and so on. And I just think that, and Egypt and so on, that just seems to me to have been laying the bed, if you will, of anger and dismay coming out of colonialism. Not unlike the anger that, legitimate anger, that persons of African descent must feel when they consider the way they are treated here in the United States, even after the end of slavery. It all has a certain parallelism. And it all seems, and this is really a hard thing to say, but I'm afraid true, it all seems to be like karma, I hate that word, but, you know, an inevitable consequence of injustice that is being borne out in a modern environment. And I don't see...
Well, it's blowback. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were also some major errors, you know. I mean, once the United States stupidly ended up in Iraq, they debathified the army, you know, and so that released, I don't know how many, about, you know, 30,000-50,000 people, mm-hmm, into a state of of nothing to do, and they are the essential soldiers of Daesh now, you know, those very same people, you know. So the United States policy of debathifying debathification, created the foot soldiers for Daesh.
Yeah, and I think that's
incredible.
Really, you know,
I think it's like so direct.
And I think no one's having a rational conversation about that, or not enough people in this country. Right now, we're seeing the Republican Party, who have been losing apparently in the fight for the presidency, having an issue which goes to the heart of terror, of fear in the American people. And they become even more reactionary, and they're saying, we don't want any people coming from Syria or Iraq coming to the United States. We don't want them in our states. We don't want them anywhere. And a hardening, an inhumane hardening that's taking place, which gathers public steam. And at the same time, the Democratic Party, which is not exactly a liberal party, becomes more and more complicit in all of this, because they too don't know how to deal with this. To me, it's very frightening, and I don't see any positive outcome. I wish I did. What I'd like to do, Penny, is, if we can, I'd like to get some of our callers in on this conversation. Is that possible, Steve? Let's go first to Joanne, and then we'll go to various people. You must be patient, everybody. Penny is in Paris. I'm here. But we do want to hear from you. But I'm going to ask you all to keep your comments as brief and succinct as possible. Joanne, you're on the air. Joanne? All right, David, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the conversation. You know, I think there's a lot of simplification of all this stuff. I mean, this didn't surprise me, you know, that they're doing this. They have to lash out some way. They don't have planes and missiles. While we, and it's not just Republicans, I really have to state this strongly, it's not Republicans, it's both. Mm-hmm. Obama started that drone campaign. And can you tell me why we don't hear headlines splash across the page on how many innocent people were killed in the drone strike last week?
Well, that's a very good point. That's a very good point.
That's why they're so pissed off. No one. Everyone seems to dance around it. It's like inhumanity. It's like, yeah, what's more inhumane? Beheading by a soldier on the battlefield, or being killed by some pimply kid eating McDonald's hamburgers in a bunker in Nevada? You know, I mean, we have to remember what started this. Our oil policy did regime change? What's going to piss off people more than that? We have to remember, and the drone strike are the ultimate terror tool of all. If we all had a drone hovering over Paris or Portland, Oregon, and they're shooting people and killing people at weddings or schools, all of us in Portland or France would be gathering guns or knives, and we'd be going shooting up people in the country that caused the drones. And you guys, you dance around this like Republicans and Democrats. We're the most inhumane country in the world, and we have to know that. We have to start seeing that. All this is caused by U.S. intervention, Western-led oil intervention, and the drones. My God, if a drone was hovering over my house this morning, how scared and terrorized everyone would be. And they have to resort to guns and knives because that's all they have. And we talked about the retaliation of the French. They increased strikes. Well, of course, they're all pissed off. Well, this is the ISIS thing in the theater is retaliation for last week's drone killing. And the other unfair part about it is there's more headlines about the ISIS inhumanity than Doctors Without Borders hospital being bombed. Doctors getting killed, patients getting killed by our own U.S. military. The last thing I'll say is the irony is we have our Veterans Day and we treat all our veterans as great heroes, which they're forced to be by our government, but the rest of the world considers our military the most rapacious, inhumane, immoral military that's ever existed on the earth. Let's get off the discussion and go to the root cause. It's our American foreign policy is a root cause. And it won't get better until we pull back. Obama and his drones, Bush, Cheney, and the next president. So I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
No, thank you very much for the call. We have other people online. Penny, do you have a response to that at all?
No, I agree with him. It's extremely generalized, but I agree with him. Yes, I do.
Yeah, I'm at a loss in a way. How does one cut through the nationalist response and the absolute terror that people legitimately feel in the face of attacks on civilians by people who don't mind killing themselves in the course of their attacks. This is something which we culturally are not used to. And it is definitely an effective terror tool. And it's happening. It's happening. And there's a promise. I always take the threats seriously, by the way. There's a promise that that these particular techniques will be coming to the United States. They'll be coming to other countries in Europe and elsewhere. And we indeed have seen this kind of Bombay, for example, this kind of attack. And of course, 9/11. So we really need to think about things in a very fundamental and serious and deep way with a historical perspective, which is not, as far as I can tell, happening. So let's do some more calls. Who do we have? Oh, I got to tell you the number, folks. It's 231-8187. Sorry about that. Francis, you're on the air.
Hi. I agree with the last caller, and I want to take it a step further, and I'm not quite sure how to say this because it's really concerning me that I'm watching the national news how many times they refer to these young people as those in positions who could be potentially radicalized. The word radicalized has been used hundreds of times over the last 2 days. Now, what does that mean? That it sounds like young people who are living in oppressed environments, if they speak out about their oppression, they could be potentially radicalized. That's the message that we're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that means that anyone here who speaks out about potential could be potentially radicalized.
Yeah, let's hear.
And then I want to speak a little bit about how the fact that our Oregon Justice Department is now having to hire a private investigator because someone in the Justice Department decided it would be okay to, quote-unquote, test their equipment by monitoring the tweets for supporters of Black Lives Matter, which is totally against the law. And that's the kind of activities that's going on here in our own state. My concern is that this ISIS, now being called something else, was created by the CIA. And no one will speak to that. And no one will speak to the fact that every time anything happens, we drop some more bombs. And there are people being killed by those bombs. Now there's a debate over how many we dropped more bombs than France did, so why is everybody saying that we're not stepping up? What do bombs do to people? They kill them in the most terrorizing way. No one's even referencing that. No one's speaking about that.
Yeah.
I don't understand. What do we think our bombs are doing? What do we think we did when we created a failed state, total chaos in Libya? What do we think is going to happen when we do that? And is this just the war merchants wanting more and more and more war so they can keep making money dropping bombs? That's what I want to know. Because this is ridiculous. It's beyond absurdity. Everyone should be able to sit down and talk at this point in this stage in the life of this world. And I don't get how we think it's all about dropping bombs.
Okay, Francis, I'm going to let you go. I want to give...
Thank you.
I want to give Penny a chance to comment if she wants to.
Yes, well, I wanted to just address her first issue, and that had to do with the radicalization of young people. And I will point out that the assailants in on Friday night, since they've all been identified now, were, you know, the youngest one was 15, and everyone was under 30. And it's really interesting that they chose their their organization chose the targets where there would be people in the age group, in their own age group, because that's who was in the concert hall listening to an American sort of rock band. And you know, all the people there were probably between 15 and 30. And all the people who were sitting in the cafes outside who got wiped out are young people, you know, the brightest and the most beautiful kind of thing. And their activities and their values are very offensive to the guys who did the terrorist acts and to their organization, since they disapprove of the decadent behavior and of drinking, and they're actually quite prudish in their behavior, and certainly strict and disciplined and all that sort of thing. And so it was youth that they destroyed, and they were destroyed by youth, and that's an interesting correlation, I think. And as to why the young people can get radicalized, I think that has something to do with, adolescence. But also, that is the time that they begin to, circulate and talk to other people and express themselves. In France, they were not particularly, or in Belgium either, they're not particularly oppressed or poor people. They are middle-class people. And so... You know, so I think you should get that kind of cleared up.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's very important. I also, in reading some stuff online, the concert hall, Bataclan?
The Bataclan, uh-huh.
Is I believe, seen by, I'm just surmising here, but I think it's seen as an operation that is dominated by Daesh. I hope I can say that right.
Daesh.
See as a Zionist project, in that the ownership is allegedly Jewish, and that it has been used a lot of times for meetings of various Jewish support groups and so on. Is that, am I correct there?
Yes, well, their ownership is not allegedly Jewish. It is Jewish, but also I should point out that the band had just played, just before they were playing in Paris, they had played in Tel Aviv. They were playing in Israel, and that is, certainly, since there's a boycott, going on in this, in Europe, and specifically among artists like that, it was an offense, really, for them to have been doing that. I think that's important to point out. There, it's also so. What you begin to see is there's so many elements that are involved in the selection, and in the timing, and in their background and what have you. You know, these the terrorists who were doing these things, most of them had been
to Syria in the last couple of years, for, you know, a year perhaps. And I would not say they got radicalized there, because they wouldn't have gone if they hadn't already been radical. But they learn a lot. They make contacts. Perhaps they became part of this organization that is doing these things now. It's complex. It truly is complex. And so there's on the individual level like that, and then there's on the larger, the state level. You know, I was glad that you pointed out, Joe, that many of these nations were created and with our completely arbitrary borderlines. But then, weren't most of the states in the United States created with arbitrary borderlines? But still, it's more recent and more fluid. And so, the fact that Daesh is creating its state sort of half in one country, Syria, and half in another, in Iraq, mm-hmm. There's no border as far as they're concerned. I think that's important to pick out, to point out, too.
Yeah, I think it's very important. I also think Americans don't really appreciate the fact that we're dropping more than 100 bombs per week on largely civilian targets. It's true that we have intelligence to suggest that whoever or whatever is in some building somewhere, but that doesn't mean that innocent people are not being killed by these bombs.
No, just like what Israel does in Palestine.
Yeah, I think that's important to understand. Number to call, 231-8187. We're talking about the attack on civilian targets in Paris and the promise of, Daesh. I got to learn that. I'm kind of ignorant. Daesh. The role that Daesh is playing in the region and the fact that their game plan is seemingly working, and the U.S. and France, let's say that, are, and probably Russia and others, are going to do exactly what the plan calls for, which will inevitably, I believe, lead to more and more disasters, particularly in nations where there is free movement and democracy. The response of those nations will be, of course, to close down, to block, and to create police states, and that is very useful.
Well, I don't know how much information is circulating in your neck of the woods about the meeting that was held in Vienna about in relation to what should happen in Syria, and that is not exactly what they all agreed upon. You know, they all want to have a ceasefire. You know, they all agreed to have a ceasefire. Of course, these things, are always somewhat in the future. You know, it's like as of January, as of February, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And but they have a ceasefire and to eventually have elections and that sort of thing. It is not necessarily the case that all of these countries want to have a lockdown or to destroy them further. I think part of the reason why they're eager to calm things down in Syria is because of the immigrants. You know, you think that the issue is big there. Well, it's enormous here. You know, they've already been 800,000 who have arrived in Europe, and that's a lot. And there are many countries here who, like some of the states in the United States, will not take the immigrants. So they would like to have a lot of the Syrians go back home, but they won't do that until there's some kind of a settlement.
Yeah, and I think I'm glad you pointed out it is not totally irrational, the response of the Western nations and Russia. Hopefully there can be a treaty made and peace made and a free elections in Syria, and hopefully the incredible minority government in Syria will be either replaced or just become a figurehead government.
I think it's going to be extremely difficult, since more than 50% of the population is now gone, you know, and they're elsewhere. So do they get to vote? How does that work? You know, it's almost a fool's errand, but lots of luck.
Yeah, I want you to stick around. I'm going to take some more calls. 231-8187. Jane.
Hi. I just wanted to kind of reiterate what the first two callers were saying. I agree with what they were saying. And the big thing is that our CIA is most likely funding ISIS or or, you know, through various ways, getting money to them, arms, and all that.
Why do you think that?
Well, it's because the fact that the military-industrial complex, which is controlled by imperialists, want to turn the United States into a totalitarian police state. And they want as many totalitarian police states. That's how they gain control.
Okay,
that's what this is all about. I mean, I think
that that's an overinflation of the role of the CIA from the point of view of an American. Excuse me, but I think that is the case. That is not necessarily what the rest of the world thinks. I think the CIA has had a role at various times, you know,
There were thousands of Nazis went into the CIA after World War II.
Yeah, but wait. Now back up a little bit.
We're talking about now.
Yeah, let's just be realistic. I think that I am very critical of the role of the CIA historically and even now, but I don't see a conspiracy that links the military-industrial complex directly with what's going on in terms of the radicalization that's taking place in parts of the of what's now called the caliphate.
Well, everything is controlled through central banks.
Okay,
international banking communities, imperialists, they control it all through supply of money. They have the supply of money. They put the money where they whichever faction they want to bring the power, they can bring the power because they control all the supply of money.
Well, let me just ask you a simple question about what you just said. Why? If they control the money, if they control the power, why would they be engaged in a vast other kind of conspiracy? I mean, it just doesn't...
There are many reasons. One is control. One is population control. They're behind most of the genocide around the globe. And they're psychopaths, basically.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm gonna let you go. Penny, you want to respond to that?
No, I don't, Tom.
Okay. Let's get some more callers in. 231-8187. Vernon, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for this discussion. It's a basic military strategy. If you want to defeat ISIS, then we should cut off the supply of arms. Now, we know that the primary arms supplier for ISIS is Saudi Arabia.
Ah.
The U.S. just cut the biggest arms deal of all time with Saudi Arabia. We back the Saudis back the jihadis, and the war goes on.
Well, actually, I agree with you on this particular question. I think Saudi Arabia is a major supporter. The kind of Islam that it pushes is essentially very fundamentalist and very reactionary. And really, most of the people involved in 9/11 were Saudis. So I'm not into a conspiracy here, but I am into understanding the role of Saudi Arabia, with whom we seem to be married on the issue of oil resources and other issues. And I think that this is a very unfortunate relationship.
And now if you look at the slate of candidates that the two major parties have put up for president, every single one of them, including Bernie Sanders, supports arming the Saudis and backing the Saudis, arming Israel and backing Israel, which means more war in the Middle East, more power to ISIS, and it essentially means World War III if we end up aligned against Russia, or even if we're with Russia. It doesn't matter which side who's on. Mm-hmm. As long as everybody's fighting, it's World War III.
Well, thank you.
And that is what both parties are promising you today.
Okay, thank you for the comment. Any response you want to make, Penny?
Well, I think the Saudi issue is extremely interesting. They both take their lead from Wahhabism, and which is the extremist. Literal kind of reading of the Quran, and they are alike in that way. But from what I read here, And what was even in this article that I cited earlier that was in the New York Review of Books in July, mm-hmm. they are not cohorts in that regard, you know, because the caliphate, you know, with al-Baghdadi as its leader, as its caliph at the present time, finds that the Saudi government is extremely corrupt and decadent and interested in wealth and in spreading, you know, in personal aggrandizement and all that sort of thing. They don't approve of those things. They disagree with the values that are operating in Saudi Arabia. So that it's more complicated than what people are saying is that they're in this together. I think it's true that the link with arms is somewhat different from necessarily from what people believe, but you know, I think it's also important to point out that most of the arms that have been sent by the United States to various rebel groups have turned up in the hands of Daesh. They don't, I think they really don't know, the United States doesn't know what it's doing when it does things to certain people. So, I think there's poor intelligence involved there.
Yeah, no,
anyway,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I've sort of finished that point.
Well, I think it's really, first of all, this is a very complex geopolitical situation. Without an analysis of the history that I just briefly touched on earlier, we really are unable to understand any of what's going on. Furthermore, Americans have no real understanding of Islam or of the various tendencies or communities within Islam. We, for example, in entering into this stupid invasion of Iraq, had no real comprehension of the difference between Sunni and Shia. And that is playing out in all of this, as well as a deep, I would call it Puritan, except that, of course, that's a Western concept, a deep Puritanism, a deep horror of the Western values, musical values, sexual values, moneyed values, property values, all kinds of stuff. And I think without that comprehension, we're bombing in the dark.
No, I agree with that, Joe. I really do. I think, you know, it was so obvious that the United States had no idea what they were getting into. Bush at all had no idea what they were getting into in invading Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that they put in place made all the most horrible decisions. So,
Well, and what deeply troubles me is that I think Obama was... There's we used to say back when he first was getting elected in 08, well, he wasn't ready for it. He wasn't ready for prime time in that he didn't have the experience in Congress, didn't have the experience in analysis. And I didn't know whether that was true or not, but I'm afraid what I'm seeing right now is that we really are very unsophisticated in all of this and consequently are having a knee-jerk reaction to every single thing that happens. This opportunity for the U.S. Militarists and so on, this opportunity, the attack on Paris, will play directly, and this is the point I've been trying to make, and I think you have as well. This opportunity is just part of the game plan of a larger image, a larger idea of the resurgence of basically 9th century Islam. And I think it's very, 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 very scary. And I think the American people are so naive in all of this and so reactionary, not to mention others in the world. You know, the fight on the question of the role of the Islamic State or Islamic states is real in Russia. It's real in many countries. There are radical elements. Now, let me be clear here. This is not Islam. This is a radical element of Islam. But those radicals do exist. They exist in many, many places. I don't think they exist inherently in the United States, but that doesn't mean that people can't take the opportunity to use, as happened in 9/11, to use the United States as a foil for furthering this radical Wahhabi ambition. So I take a deep breath here. I guess we want to hear from some more people. 231-8187. William, you're on the... Hello? No, he's not here. Jane. Is it Jane or James? Hello? Okay, go ahead.
Hi, this is Rebel. I have a few comments about the topic.
Okay. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, speak.
Oh, I'm on there? Okay.
You are. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. This is Rebel, and I just have a few comments about this whole situation.
Sure.
I'd like to challenge both of you to realize that our government is corrupt, and if there is a conspiracy, we would probably do some due diligence to investigate that versus just disregard it. And I would also challenge you.
I can't understand what he's saying because there's so much noise where he is.
Yeah, you're on a you're on a cell phone, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, get very close to it if you, otherwise.
Okay. Okay, can you hear me now?
It's better. Can you hear him, Penny?
Yes, but, you know, let's see how it goes.
Okay, I'll pull over, actually, as soon as I can. That
oh, yeah, don't drive and talk on a phone. That's bad.
Well, I'm doing it with Bluetooth. That's probably why you have the noise in my cabin.
Right.
But anyway, I just wanted to challenge that Iraq was actually a training bed for ISIS. They normally destroy government equipment when they leave a place, and they didn't in this case. It all went to ISIS. They traveled in caravans up through Iraq into Syria. Our government is corrupt, and when somebody, you know, reveals these conspiracies, we shouldn't just shy them away and shoo them away and say, hey, this isn't real. That when in fact all the evidence points to our government being complicit, it's a problem, reaction, solution situation. The Taliban, we also trained in Afghanistan, and now they are terrorists against us. ISIS is the same exact thing, and that's all I have to say.
Okay, well, thank you for the comment. Penny, you want to respond at all?
Well, yes, I think we've already established that, yes. That the United States, you know, contributes to the creation of some of our worst enemies.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point. I am at this point very concerned purely domestically, that is, in the United States. I see this as a sudden opportunity for the idiots, I don't know how else to label them, who are the present Republican Party. You know, when I was coming up, the Republican Party it was the party of Eisenhower and many others with whom one might disagree, but they were not irrational, although their foreign policy was very aggressive. And I think that what's happening now is that opportunism has come to dominate that party, and they are fundamentally racist, fundamentally reactionary, fundamentally anti the welfare of the American people. And they now, because of what's happened, will be able to use the flag of nationalism to possibly even gain the presidency. And certainly they already control Congress. This is a very serious situation. So.
Yes.
You know, and I know you're there in France, so from the perspective of someone far away, but I think just by looking, and I'm sure you do, at American press and at what you hear and see, it's really obvious. And yet, the American people are, I don't even know if I could be fair in saying this, but it's almost as if we're willfully ignorant and simple-minded. And I think this is a very, very dangerous way to be, particularly in this situation. And this is a thing which needs careful analysis, careful thought, and recognition of the unfortunate role the United States has played in developing both imperialism and the situation very specifically in the Middle East. So I'm very frightened, and I don't see a good answer. I don't see a good outcome of all of this. But let's go to the phones. Maybe somebody... Bob, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello?
Go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air.
All right, well... Okay, I'm making it real brief. I'm in the middle of work right now. You know, I'm just working class American out here doing some labor jobs. And I'm listening to you guys talk, and I got like 2 points. I got a left-wing point and a right-wing point.
Okay.
And this is a religious battle. Like you said, ninth century Muslim extremism.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, under that rule, how was that fought back in the day? You know, they had these crusaders, which were like religious soldiers, Templar, if you would, you know.
Yeah.
That were like special forces, you know, under the church, which would go in and fight these people, you know? But now it's like our ideology is being attacked and church and state is getting mixed up. And, you know, it's you know, you got these important people like the president who's treading on, he's treading on glass here, making decisions because he doesn't want to step out of the boundaries of what's going on. If he's already been labeled, you know, a terrorist himself, like to where, you know, it's just a big race thing. To where we just gotta
okay,
get over it,
like, I'm going to have to let you go. You violated our basic rule and language, but also we're running out of time. Penny, I want to thank you very much for being with us and for participating in this, especially since you're feeling ill. And I want to urge everybody to really inform themselves on these issues and to not fall into a hysterical mindset. This is a very serious situation. It takes a great deal of serious thought and understanding and historical analysis.
And there are things that are, you know, to read. There's tons of things to read that give you information.
Yeah, this New York Times article in July, I think, is very, very important, among other things. Thank you very much, Penny. I'll be talking to you sometime soon, hopefully
okay.
in a less stressful way. Pardon me?
Thank you very much, Joe.
Well, thank you. You all stay tuned. This is KBOO. We do the best in music and the best in public affairs broadcasting, and you will not hear this kind of conversation anywhere else on the airwaves.
It's coming through a crack in the wall on a visionary flood of alcohol from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, from the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month is the amazing Nina Simone, showing Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. Nina Simone was one of America's true musical geniuses. With her unique signature mix of layering folk, gospel, classical, pop, and African music, along with a revolutionary vision of Black freedom, pride, and defiance. Again,